Good morning. Good morning. Can you all hear me? I just want to start by sharing with you that this is my birthday morning. Yay! Another day, another life, another moments, more moments of life. And what I'm calling the talk today is the path of totality. And one of the benefits of losing one's memory is that I must have heard that before, but it sounds completely new to me. I'm hoping that will be more gifts of memory loss. But so I just like was so struck by that phrase, the path of totality. Thought it must have some teaching for us. So we'll see. See if this works. As we all learned last week, if we didn't know that the path of totality is when the moon blocks out the sun 100%. So here in Belmont, it was 93%. So, path of totality, maybe it describes an aspect of the way I want to live my life, path of totality. So I watched the mind as this phrase, appeared to me, trying to find teachings from the path of totality. So we'll see what happens. So even though we were not actually in the path of totality, I sat still on a hill, on the grass, 5 minute walk from my house, with my daughter at the Belmont Payson Reservoir, which supplies Cambridge with water via fresh pond. And that morning, I realized I'd forgotten to get eclipse glasses and called everyone and everywhere to no avail. And then my daughter called to tell me that she was driving back from her Five Rhythms intensive dance workshop in New York, and in back home and just in time for the eclipse. And by the way, she had an extra pair of eclipse glasses. So maybe it's because my birthday, and it's a birthday that always is an ever higher number, with an impermanence ever on the horizon. So the mind is kind of drawn, to wonder. And so the path of totality conjures up multiple meanings beyond the obvious astronomical one. Multiple mysteries in this single phrase. And maybe you have some of your own associations that you can share after the talk. In some ways, the phrase sounds to me like the way I aspire to live, for better or worse. I've always wanted to do so many things and to give my whole self to each of them. In whatever way life is lifing me, be it with joy or with pain, as a professor or an author or artist or musician or nature lover, as a mother, a daughter, a sister, a lover, and a bubby. Each and every life seems to me to be on a path of totality where we are totally alive and then totally not. May it be a long way off. Whether trotting the globe in the ice of Antarctica or hiking the hot suns of the Sinai Desert, whether through open-heartedness or brokenheartedness, we cultivate attention for this moment. And the more we cultivate attention for this moment, the more we walk a path of totality. Or we walk a path of totality, whether we know it or not. And our practice is waking up to that path. We do this through human awareness that we've been granted in this lifetime. We do this through our brief presence in the world. We do it through language, giving meaning to this and that. This week's parasha is wary of the human ability to use language that by nature misses the mark and distorts or constricts an incomprehensible totality, a reality. So much of this I learn from you. When we sit together, I'm buoyed by the fullness of your commitment to show up each week, to agree to be in stillness that allows and invites you to give yourself to how life is lifing you in this moment and in the course of a lifetime, in these lives we get to live together. Our practice is to open awareness that gives space for the totality of what can be experienced through our senses in this moment by these small limited selves that are connected to a vastness of the infinite one. We observe the mind's endless commentaries, including confusion and insight, including the heart's openness and constriction, including what we would give anything not to have to experience or even to know. On our path of totality, we experience a wide spectrum from uplift to dread and back. The practice is simply a willingness to bring some patience and compassion to what gets cultivated in stillness, to what is asking to be seen and known and felt. So the eclipse seemed like one of the infinite ways that the universe or the Holy One of Blessing reaches out for us. Hey, you creatures down on earth, look how the Holy One of Blessing orchestrates with profound dependability the movements of this stellar ballet. Look, feel, welcome all that burdens, all that sustains us and connects us to each other. Look at what is the uplift on each one's path of totality on a wild planet that connects us to each other and to this ever divine unfolding. And so back on Earth, from my daughters and my little spot up at the res, our relationship to the stellar ballet unfolded, and it's probably always unfolding. But what was thrilling, what was a thrilling visual jolt of our vast interconnection by watching the movement of darkness cover the light almost imperceptibly. So it was in fact not a totality, right? But a 93% part of the sun hidden by the moon's dance, which meant that you could still see a tiny little blazing sliver of sun caressing a circle of darkness that traced the moon's movement across the sun. In the air, there was a kind of dusk. There were still shadows on the ground, so delineating sun from none, but the birds were still, and there was like a diaphanous curtain that filtered the air in an unusual way, softening and with elements perhaps of foreboding. Our meditation is based on honing our attention and ability to be with what is. What is being a name for the divine? Rather than locked into our personal orbit of reactivity and judgment and ever-present stories about this moment, this being, we practice allowing what's inside and out, watching it arise, abiding, and pass into and out of consciousness as we attend to our six senses, seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, and thinking. So here's my flimsy segue from observing the path of totality to a parasha that asks us to pay attention to appearing and disappearing subtleties on the skin of a human being. So we shift from macro to micro. And this week's Torah portion is Tazria. Tazria means she bears seed, or she conceives. This is also the parasha in which the priest has to notice and closely examine a body that has a strange manifestation or dis-ease of the skin. So many of the laws or directions of Torah have to do with paying close attention to what's going on inside and out. This week, it's the ability of the priest to notice a strange eruption on a person's skin that can be life-saving for the community as a whole. The priest must pay attention to figure out when the person must go into isolation and when they may return into community. And it describes the purification process for a woman after she gives birth. That entails giving her blessed time off from her usual duties in order to heal and to suckle new life. The Torah discusses the laws of purity and impurity, which Reb Moshe has offered us to think of as ready or not ready. The woman gives birth, who gives birth gets to lie in for a certain number of weeks if she gives birth to a son, and another number of weeks if she gives birth to a daughter. As some of us have experienced, when we give birth, it takes us way out of our comfort zone to push a new life into the world. How do we bow to the movement of the natural order, be it birth or the eclipse, allowing the body to open to the totality of birthing a new life? And it can also be a new life that's a creation that you see coming into being from yourself. How do we take part in the holy transformation of being a single person, then turning into two separate beings? How to usher this new life through the birth canal, whether it's an actual birth or a creative birth, and into our arms and onto our breast? It stretches and stresses not only our bodies, but what we can and can't do in the world while we're nursing new life. Our parasha this week discusses an aspect of ritual impurity that's named tzara'at, tzara'at, a discoloration of the skin or clothing that requires isolating the person outside of community. When and how to allow the person to come back into community and end her isolation? That's up to the priest, who turns into a kind of doctor to diagnose and to orchestrate the isolation from and return to community. There's a strict examination by the priest to know when it's okay to return so that it doesn't threaten the community. So when the Torah gets a little too obscure for me to understand, I thankfully turn to our teachers, including Aviva Zornberg, who's also some can be very obscure to me, but I wanted to share with you what she writes about this. So here's her words. Again, we find that the survival of the individual and the community depends on the priest paying close attention and knowing when the person can return. Until then, The person can't talk to anyone, but must call out loud, Tame, Tame, impure, impure, I am impure, stay away from me. Rashi describes it as higalmut, to be deprived, lonely, separated. Quoting him, like a bird who gathers all the desolation of the world. So now in my experience, I find a certain comfort to be with a person who has allowed themselves to be with desolation or depression and has found their way out or can peek out from time to time and return back into connection, into community. Maybe it's a little bit like when we go away on a meditation retreat, allowing ourselves to feel all the feelings. And usually the difficult ones say, oh, finally, there's a time to pay attention to me. The feelings that we don't have time to tend to in our day-to-day life. Or that would be too crushing. And how what's inside us can be a torment and a teacher. Opening possibilities to witness this life and this world in a more compassionate way. So disappointment doesn't have to have the last say. And in thus witnessing, we bring fresh insight and strengthen our compassion. Maybe this is all a part of the path of totality, to open to the desolation of the world, to feel our separation, our loneliness, and when ready, to return into community, in joy, with renewed patience and love for these brief little lives nurtured in grace. So here's some more Aviva Zornberg musings on the Parsha. She references the teaching of Rambam, also known as Maimonides, 12th century. He teaches that Sara'at is more a spiritual disorder that expresses itself psychosomatically. It's a sign of disorder and an invitation for healing. It's about the skin of the flesh, which is a liminal space between outside and inside. It's an in-between place of dis-ease. The 19th century Ishbitzer Rebbe, a.k.a. Mea HaShaloach, teaches that language is not the same as the thing itself. In nature, it is what it is. In society, language adds and takes away. In language, there can be many things. In nature, there's only one thing it could be. Language can treat it this way and that. This is pure and this is impure, and can create anxiety from that not knowing. It's an attempt to make sense out of something that can't be tacked down. The image of Tzara'at is that his hair is wild and clothes are smeared and lips veiled. It's of an unsocial person who can only say, Tame, Tame, I am impure, impure. She sits outside society and sets up barriers by misuse of language, so must live away from others. It's an extreme manifestation of a spiritual ill. The text also calls it Yoshev Badad. He sits alone. Too many times I catch myself rejecting this world as it is. No, 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 too awful. Leave me alone. Wanting and not wanting to be left alone. It's one who has no shape or form, like a lone bird on a roof. Wakeful, shakaditi, I'm wakeful. In this parsha, God has destroyed her own place in the world. She has destroyed connection to the other. God has created and is living in a broken world, stuck. The human being is the one who can recognize what is not. and sins by misuse of language. In everything, there's a mixture of good and evil. But if she is connected with the good root of things, then good will prevail over evil. With one's own eyes, one can become redemptive for others. That's a quote, I think, from the Mea Shiloach, and I don't know what it means exactly, so I'm hoping you'll help me. With one's own eyes, one can become redemptive for others. Maybe the ability to see through what appears to us. Then you become aware of others, connected to them. You can tap into vitality, healing. Primo Levi was a chemist before and after the Holocaust, and he saw that only pure zinc cannot be attracted by other chemicals. This is the praise of purity that resists evil. He says enchantment is the ability to separate the good from the bad. The life of the field is an expression of a larger rachamim, compassion. Purity can be enlivened to create new connections. Everything is in communication with everything else. And the highest form of prayer turns us to deeper and deeper connections with each other. Ken yehi ratzon, may it be so. So the week of this parsha, in the Jerusalem Post, an Israeli newspaper, mysteriously delivered to me on its own, for its own take on the parasha, based on the proximity of the parasha Tazria to Pesach. So it says, one of the greatest puzzles of being human is the gap between exalted and mundane parts of our nature. Understandably, many find the Passover story inspiring and the details of ritual purity due to skin ailments uninspiring in the extreme. We can dream and imagine and create, yet at the same time, we are constantly in thrall to the demands of our bodies. Humans are split creatures who, in the midst of writing prayers or composing love poems, or exploring the outer reaches of mathematics, still have to go to the bathroom. The traditional Jewish response to this conundrum is not to deny the physical, but to elevate it. Since we share the need for food with other animals, we offer blessings before we eat to distinguish ourselves and sanctify the physical act of eating. How can we both be transcendent and shaped from dust? At the same time that we contemplate God's freeing the nation from Egypt and the promise of new life, we are worrying about diagnosing a discolored spot that appears on the skin of a possibly deceased individual. And yet there is, in the combination of the two stories, an important understanding about life that engages us to this day. The naive might read the Passover story as though God was liberating the Jewish people to a perfect life. They had been slaves, and now they're miraculously free, and their freedom would make them forever happy. We begin to suspect that is not the case, when the Israelites complain and lament their lack of meat and the conditions of the desert and the absence of Moses when he goes up the mountain. And still, there remains a part of us that is rooting for the ideal. Then along comes Tazria that granularly describes blights, an almost clinical approach to illness. The joining of Tazria with Shabbat, HaChodesh, is the Torah's way of announcing to us, you see, you are never free from everyday mishaps and pains of life, You cannot escape the constraints of having a body by elevating your soul. This is the reality with which we all live. You do not leave Egypt for Eden. You leave Egypt to live a life of meaning and purpose, which includes suffering and pain, both of the body and spirit, and also the joy and wonder of a path of totality. So thank you. That was fun. So let's be quiet for a moment. And then I'll take your delicious comments, questions, issues, insights.